I'm Julia Paskin. Join me as I talk with NPR's Sarah McCammon about her new book, The Ex-Evangelicals, Loving, Living, and Leaving the White Evangelical Church. That's April 25th at the Crawford. Tickets at las.com/events.
It's Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us today, wherever you're listening, here in Southern California or worldwide, on the KPCC app or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm joined this week by film critics Tim Cogshell of Alt Film Guide and Cinegods.com. Andy Klein is with us as well. Angie Hahn, who's deputy entertainment editor at Mashable, and Charles Solomon, critic for Animation Scoop and Animation Magazine. We begin with the much-awaited feature film adaptation of the stage musical In the Heights. Anthony Ramos, Corey Hawkins, and Leslie Grace star John M. Chu is the director of the film. It's written by Kiara Alegria Hudes, and it's based on the stage musical by Hudes and Lin-Manuel Miranda. The film's rated PG-13. Tim, please start us with In the Heights.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed this film. I kind of thoroughly enjoy these films whenever they come to us, and they come to us with all different kinds of names and styles and content, but more or less the same thing. This has a whole lot in common with Rent, which of course had a whole lot in common with La Boheme. The original, The Heights, Lin-Manuel first started workshopping this way back in 1999. Which was just a few years after Rent had hit Broadway. So that style is there in this movie. Washington Heights, New York is where we are. It's this community in New York that's full of Dominicans mostly, and some Chileans and Peruvians and Puerto Ricans. And we are with several characters throughout this community as our central character tries to figure out whether or not he wants to try to go back to the Dominican Republic. We have a young female protagonist who's home from Stanford, where she's not really fitting in very well and is thinking about simply staying at home. And all of these stories and many more play themselves out in this beautifully set and lyricized musical that has a touch of magical realism in it. That would be the thing that I think the film brings that perhaps the play did not have, that little bit of magical realism, and perhaps an additional song or two. A few of them got to me, and I thought I thoroughly appreciated it all, but it's all very much in the shape of that sort of era of Rent that's been upon us for 20 years now.
In the Heights, Angie.
This one is just such a joy. You can watch it on HBO Max, but if you're up for a trip to the cinema, I really can't think of a more perfect welcome back into theaters. There's just such a feeling of warmth and joy and community running through the whole thing. I was crying by the end of the first song. And the songs, of course, are great. This was a Broadway hit before it ever made it to the screen. But I also really like that John Chu, who came up shooting concert documentaries like for Justin Bieber, the Step Up movies, things like that. He really knows how to shoot dance, which I think we've all seen enough bad movie musicals to know that we can't take for granted. The opening number, I think, is just sets the tone right away with this spectacular example of the rhythm and the energy that this movie has. So yeah, and I also think it just captures the spirit of New York City so well, which again is something that a lot of movies are set in New York. Not all of them seem to get that, but just from top to bottom, I had such a good time with this.
And so, Angie, it's filmed on actual streets of New York as opposed to a soundstage?
It is. It's filmed on actual streets of New York, which is part of why it gets that New York flavor. But it also just kind of gets that rhythm, the hustle and bustle of the energy, or the hustle and bustle of the city, the way it feels both like a big, vast place where anything can happen, but also like a tiny community all at once. I lived in New York for a while, so that part of it felt very familiar and true to me.
That's great. In the Heights, Andy.
I thought this was great, in fact. Handily the best film of the week, and let me not be the first to say that Lin-Manuel Miranda is a genius and a prodigy, since he was 19 when he wrote the first version of this. It's got all this energy. The lyrics are incredibly clever and complex. It's done almost like an opera. It's kind of got the same, almost the same ratio of spoken dialogue to sung dialogue as Umbrellas of Cherbourg. I mean, a little more spoken dialogue than that, but and pretty much the same kind of ratio as in Hamilton. It is filled with energy. It is definitely something to see on the big screen. My only criticism I could make, and it's probably because it's the first time I've ever heard the score, there are no tunes that you come out whistling. There's no climb every mountain here, which I kind of always expect from musicals. But nonetheless, all the music is infectious. And again, the rap internal rhyming kind of dialogue slash lyrics are just amazing.
In the Heights, of course, Lin-Manuel Miranda and Chiara Alegría Hudis collaborating on the stage production. Hudis wrote the screenplay adaptation, and it stars Anthony Ramos, Corey Hawkins, Leslie Grace, John M. Chu directs. Rated PG-13, Andy Klein saying, see it on the big screen if you can. It's in wide release. It is also available for streaming on HBO Max. The drama Holler is written and directed by Nicole Regal. Jessica Barden, Becky Ann Baker, and Austin Emilio star in the film. Angie.
Yeah, this is a drama about a teenage girl in Rust Belt, Ohio, who tries to pull herself out of poverty and into a better life by taking up with a really dangerous scrap metal crew to earn money for college. And I like this one a lot. It feels a little bit to me like the movie that Hillbilly Elegy maybe could or should have been in a better world, in that it's also about the smart young person who's trying to move past her hard scrabble upbringing through higher education, but feels really conflicted about it at the same time. But where that movie felt kind of too glib and phony for my taste, this one feels a lot more honest and gritty and thoughtful. There's also shades of Winter's Bone, I thought, particularly in the visual and emotional chilliness of the setting, but most of all in its tough female protagonist and the lead actress's star-making turn, because Jessica Barden is really, really good in this. Her character, she's not someone I had seen in a lot of stuff before this, but her character carries herself with this toughness, and yet every once in a while she lets enough vulnerability kind of slip through, and it just breaks you every time, or at least it did for me. The overall arc of this story, I think, might feel a little bit familiar to some people, but I do think that Nicole Regal, this is her screenwriting and directing feature debut, I think she does such a great job of bringing you into this world and making that world feel specific and lived in, and of balancing despair and hope when it comes to Ruth's story. So I thought it was really gripping.
We're talking about the drama Holler from first-time feature director and writer Nicole Regal. Tim.
Oh, Miss Regal, outstanding work, young lady. This young girl in this movie, who's a bit of a math whiz, and otherwise just about smarter than everybody in this town, although not quite as wise as a few. And she has this brother who knows that he's not as smart as her, and he tells her all the time, you should just take my keys to my truck and just get the hell out of here. Just get out of here. But she's going to try to make her way, and she thinks she should stay there in that town and stick it out because it's home. She has this mother played by Pamela Alden who's in jail, something to do with drugs and using drugs and still and getting caught. The whole OxyContin thing that's been plaguing the nation for so many years now, playing out in the background here. And Amy's just is absolutely right. She's just wonderful, Miss Barden, in this movie. But so is everybody else. Becky Ann Baker, Pamela Alden, Gus Hopper, and a wonderful actor named Austin Emilio as this scary, scary scrapyard guy who is very menacing. And he sort of really nails this movie down with a little bit of menace that it needs in order for it all to move forward. I like the whole lot, too.
Holler is the film. It's rated R. It's at Lemley's Monica Film Center in Santa Monica, Lemley's Playhouse 7 in Pasadena, and on several video-on-demand platforms. Holler, rated R. A Perfect Enemy, a film starring Athena Straits, Tomas Cote, and Marta Nieto, is directed by Kike Maio. Andy, just give us a start, at least, to A Perfect Enemy.
Okay, this is a thriller in kind of a sub-Polanski mode, and you can go a couple levels sub-Polanski and still be really effective. An architect is waiting for his flight at the airport after a lecture, and he is accosted by this young woman who will not leave him alone and insists on telling him a series of grotesque stories that get more and more grotesque and get a little scary, because she seems to have the potential for violence. This is it's very much on the edge the whole time, and there are hints that we're heading for a Twilight Zone sort of ending. There's a lot of strange visions that the architect is having that seem to relate to the girl, like as they walk around the airport we see a model of the airport in the center of the airport in which we see their figures in different positions as they move around. Are we seeing it? Is he seeing it? Is she doing something supernatural? These are all questions that get resolved by the end. And the end is, you might consider it a cheap shot kind of explanation, but it really does work, and it really keeps you on the edge for the whole thing.
We're talking about A Perfect Enemy. The film is unrated in selected theaters. More to come on Film Week in just a moment. It's Film Week on KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. Joined this week by critics Angie Hahn, Charles Solomon, and Tim Cogshell. Next up is an animated feature. John Cho's voice and Jimmy Wong's star, Chris Appelhans, is the director and co-screenwriter of Wish Dragon. Charles, please start us on this film.
Well, this is another example of China spending money on both sides of the Pacific, trying to compete with not so much American animation as anime. And it's a pretty shameless ripoff of Aladdin. Dean, a young man who's winning, who looks a lot like Hiro Hamada in Big Hero 6, lives in this rundown but friendly old little neighborhood in China, the sort that's being bulldozed. He wants to get back together with Li Na, the girl he liked when they were in elementary school, who's moved away and become a fabulously successful and rich model. And he finds a magic teapot with a dragon in it, with John Cho's voice, who can grant three wishes. Is this starting to sound familiar? Is the dialogue about how do you fit into that little teeny place? Yes, all the thousands of years, all the previous masters. We've heard it all before. They also set up a whole bunch of story points and then don't pay any attention to them. Like there's a thug he fights who never shows his hands. Well, is he a demon? Is this something magical? No. And then later on, he takes out his hands and uses them in the fight, and it doesn't mean anything. Neither does the business about this being the dragon's last master, and when he gets his three wishes, he's free and can go to heaven. It's very, very copied from other things. The one interesting thing in it for me was that the dragon moves not in the kind of corkscrews and spirals and S-curves you might expect, but it's more squared. And it brings to mind motifs from Chinese art, particularly the Taotie mask. That's one of the ancient symbols in Chinese art. And that kind of bending and curving suggests there really could have been something interesting there, but they didn't find it.
We're talking about the animated feature Wish Dragon. Angie.
Yeah, like he said, we've seen this all before. We've heard this all before. It's fine. It's not great. It's not awful. It might fill a role in your life if your kids are clamoring to watch Aladdin again and you're like, I will watch anything else, but I still want them to be happy. But otherwise, it's just not really interesting in any way. The fact that it's so reminiscent of Aladdin is kind of a disservice to John Cho, because he is great. I love him as an actor, but this kind of over-the-top sassiness that he's trying to do here is not his strength. He is no Robin Williams, which is, you know, that's who is really, but it sets him up for that kind of unflattering comparison. I do like the design of the pink fuzzy dragon, and I think Charles makes a good point about how it moves, which is kind of unusual. And I like the setting of the movie. I like that it shows how this city has changed so much and so fast, and you kind of see how the old coexists with the new. But I just feel so indifferent about this whole thing. A lot of it feels competent without feeling really inspired in any way. I've seen worse, I've seen better. I forgot it as soon as I saw it.
We're talking about the animated feature Wish Dragon. It's rated PG and it's streaming on Netflix. The comedic drama Sublet is set in Tel Aviv. It stars John Benjamin Hickey and Niv Nissim. The film's directed by Eitan Fox, who co-wrote the screenplay with Itay Siegel. Tim, what'd you think of Sublet?
I like it quite a lot. A lot of great films from Mr. Fox, Yossi and Yeager, Walk on Water, all these wonderful films over the years. And this is a rather obvious, but nevertheless affecting light drama about an older man who spends 5 days in Tel Aviv with a younger man, and how it fulfills and changes both of them. He's supposed to be subletting the young fellow's, he's 24-year-old's apartment as he writes a travel piece for the New York Times. But you know, been there, done that, but there's all sorts of specific content here, and they have all these lovely, lovely conversations. about very timely subjects. And then there's a bit of a familial melodrama that they're each dealing with, but it's all sort of solved and worked out in the end. And there is this rapturous score by these music supervisors, Tom DeRome and Asa Riva, that's just exquisite as we wander around the beautiful scenes of Tel Aviv, Israel. It's hard. Sometimes we can forget what a beautiful city that is.
Sublet, the comedic drama, is unrated. It's at several of the Lemley's theaters, as well as available on Lemley's virtual cinema in about another week or so. Also next month, it'll be on other on-demand platforms. The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard stars Salma Hayek, Samuel L. Jackson, and Ryan Reynolds. Patrick Hughes directed it, and it's written by Tom O'Connor, Brandon Murphy, and Philip Murphy. Angie, what'd you think of The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard?
You know, I really did not care for this one. It is an action comedy starring Ryan Reynolds as the straight-laced hitman named Bryce. Samuel L. Jackson plays a loose cannon hitman named Kincaid, and Salma Hayek is Kincaid's even wilder con woman wife. And Antonio Banderas kind of rounds out the lead cast as the villain, a Greek billionaire named Aristotle. And when you have that many great charismatic movie stars tossed together, it's not going to be all bad. There are parts when that is almost enough. Selma Hayek in particular seems to be having so much fun that she even sells the pretty terrible dialogue that she's given, much of which revolves around her boobs. But this movie just can't seem to stop getting in its own way. It feels like you're riding in a car where someone is just kind of alternating between slamming the brakes and slamming the accelerator every 2 feet. Like every time I thought it was finally about to get going, it just would, you know, screech to a halt so it can explain some other backstory thing I don't care about, or show me some other action scene that doesn't really work that well, because as much action as there is in this, most of it feels pretty incoherent. I described it as an action comedy, and the comedy half, to me at least, didn't really work either. A lot of it just amounts to a lot of swearing and kind of very creative insults that maybe a 13-year-old would come up with. I think the nicest thing I want to say about this movie is that it is set in Italy. It was shot in Italy, so a lot of the backdrops are very pretty. But yeah, it just really didn't do it for me. I like most of these movie stars, but all of them have been in better movies than this, and I think I will just go watch those movies instead.
The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard is rated R. The action comedy is in wide release starting early next week, and it has select showtimes this weekend in local theaters. The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard, directed by Patrick Hughes. The horror film from New Zealand, Censor, is directed by Prano Bailey Bond, who co-wrote the screenplay with Anthony Fletcher. Andy, please start us on Censor.
Yeah, this is set in the early 80s when the VHS revolution is happening, and the main character is in the official censor office. I actually thought they were in England, not New Zealand, from the accents, but who knows. But we get lots of time checks in that everybody is on typewriters instead of computers, and Mrs. Thatcher's on the TV complaining about these cheap horror movies that are polluting the culture. So the lead woman is a censor in the bureau, and she's come under fire because there seems to have been a copycat killing based on some really gross horror film that she approved. But at the same time, she's got her own demons because her little sister disappeared at the age of 7, and she becomes convinced that an actress in one of these films is actually her little sister, and starts sort of stalking the people involved in making these films, trying to find her little sister. It's, again, very much a thing of at what point does reality cease and are we in hallucinations or a dream or whatever, and to what extent are we having her POV determine the direction of this thing. I thought it was pretty good. It's very short, and which is a positive thing in this kind of horror film. It gets stylistically a little bit David Lynchy by the end, maybe a little Cronenberg, and again, definitely Polanski's Repulsion is operating here. I thought it worked.
Censor is the film, and just to clarify, it is set in Britain in 1985. Angie, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I concur. I think the style is such a great part of this film. It's so arresting. I love the way that she plays around with these muted colors in the beginning that feel kind of sickly, but also restrained and elegant. And then she starts introducing more lurid shades or changing the aspect ratio around or making the film look grainier as Enid starts to, the main character starts to quote unquote lose the plot, as one of the other characters put it. And I do think that maybe even at 90 minutes, it felt a little bit slow to me at times. It sometimes feels like the film is so enamored of its mood and style that it kind of forgets to prod the story along. But the mood and style are indeed really worthy of savoring. And then it all builds to this really thrillingly disturbing climax that I thought was more than worth the wait. The film that this one really brought to mind for me was Barbarian Sound Studio, the 2012 Peter Strickland film, not just for the basic premise, but for that kind of stylish retro setting and slow creeping sense of dread. And I think that fans of that one will want to check out this one. But, you know, that's not to say like Prano Bailey Bond is also just seems like such an interesting, exciting new filmmaker in her own right. I'm so eager to see what she does next.
She's the director and co-screenwriter of Censor, set in Britain in 1985. The film is unrated. You can see it at Lemley's Glendale, at the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema in downtown L.A., and the Landmark in Westwood. It's also available on multiple on-demand platforms beginning next week. I also want to invite you to join me coming up Monday evening, June 21st, for a special AirTalk Live virtual event celebrating the final season of Amazon's hit streaming series, Bosch. And if you're a fan of Bosch, you'll want to be there, as Michael Connelly, who created the character, will be with me. Titus Welliver, who plays Bosch, a number of members of the cast are going to be there. And fun for me to be able to say that I make a brief voice appearance in one of the episodes in the final season of Bosch. We'll talk about that too. We hope you join us Monday, June 21st, 6 p.m. You can sign up at kpcc.org/in-person. Film Week on KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle, joined by critics Andy Klein, Tim Cogshell, Charles Solomon, and Angie Hahn. Our next film up this week is Le Dosis, The Dose, a film from Argentina that is written and directed by Martin Kraut. The film stars Carlos Portaluppi and Ignacio Rogers. Tim, please start us on Le Dosis.
This is a very taut thriller about an angel of death style nurse, male nurse, euthanizing patients in debilitating circumstances in this provincial hospital. A younger male nurse comes there. He's very smart, too. He's smart enough to figure out what that first male nurse is doing. And then he starts doing it. Only he does it to whoever he wants to do it to. And this is all about how that first angel of death is going to expose or at least save some patients from that second angel. Look, this is a very, very good movie. I particularly love Carlos. He's a big guy. 300 plus pounds he is. Yet he manages to make himself so small in this world that no one notices him or what he's doing. Very, very taut and pointed little thriller. I like it quite a lot.
And we have so many films this week from first-time feature filmmakers like Martin Kraut, who wrote and direct La Dosis, the Dose. Rather impressive. The film, again, from Argentina and is unrated. It's available on multiple on-demand platforms. Revolution Rent, a documentary featuring a former cast member of Rent traveling to his parents' homeland in Cuba to do a production of that stage musical. The film is directed by Victor Patrick Alvarez and Andy Senor Jr. Charles, what did you think of Revolution Rent?
Well, full disclosure, I saw Rent on Broadway and didn't like it at all. But this is about bringing it the first musical in something like 50 years to Cuba. You would think politically Evita would play better there. This is really two documentaries imperfectly grafted together. There's one about Senor and a big company of people, apparently underwritten by the Netherlanders, going and staging this production of Rent with a cast that's never done professional theater before. Much more interesting, Senor's family were all exiled by Castro when he came to power. And his widowed mother is very upset that he's going to do this and has these wonderful over-the-top speeches where she tells him she won't sleep a wink the whole time he's gone. But then she comes back to Cuba, which she hasn't visited since she was a girl, to find her mother's grave and to see the production. And she is so much more interesting and so charming and so much fun and so charismatic. You wish they would have just focused on her and not on the theater performances.
Sounds fascinating. I can't wait to see it. It's on HBO Max, Revolution Rent, directed by Victor Patrick Alvarez and Andy Senor Jr. It's unrated. The Misfits, a thriller starring Pierce Brosnan, is directed by Rennie Harlan, co-written by Robert Henney and Kurt Wimmer. Andy, what'd you think of The Misfits?
Rennie Harlan has made some really good films like The Deep Blue Sea, Die Hard 2, a number of really good action thrillers, and I count on him for being able to do this, though he also has a lot of failures. This is definitely one of the failures. It's a low-rent attempt to set up a franchise, as far as I can tell. Basically, an Ocean's 11 setup. Pierce Brosnan is a gentleman thief in the Cary Grant mode, and he gets recruited by some sort of Robin Hood types who want to steal a gazillion dollars worth of gold from where it's being held for a terrorist organization. Tim Roth is the villain as the guy who runs the private prison in which the gold is being stored. It has no snap at all. The middle act really slows down. I kept waiting for genuine witticisms, and they didn't show up. This is not even up to the level of The Expendables.
All right. The movie is The Misfits. Tim, how did you see it?
Hey, Rennie's finished. He's a part of the sort of 90s Euro invasion, along with Verhoeven and Jan de Bont, and all these guys came into Hollywood making these big action movies, Speed and Twister and all of that. Rennie was also Cliffhanger in Cutthroat Island, but he did make my favorite popcorn movie of the era, The Long Kiss Goodnight, with Gina Davis and Sam Jackson, when Sam Jackson started saying, "I'm Sam Jackson," all through the movie. Rennie hasn't changed all that much. He's still making the same big, overblown, not very good action plotters, but they move pretty briskly. This one, I would have to agree to Andy. It's not in his top tier of material, but it's definitely a Rennie Harlan film, that's for sure.
The Misfits is rated R. It's in select theaters, and next Tuesday it begins its run on on-demand platforms. Take Me Somewhere Nice is a Dutch drama written and directed by Anna Sendejarvic. The film stars Sarah Lunazorek. Angie, what'd you think of Take Me Somewhere Nice?
This one was so charming and interesting. And if you like that sort of Jim Jarmusch, not much happens, deadpan vibe, I think that you might like it too. You were talking earlier about how we have so many directorial debuts this week, and this is actually another one. I think that a lot of this movie is just so fun. So it follows this Dutch teenager named Alma who visits Bosnia in search of her estranged dying father and ends up on this odd little road trip with her layabout cousin and his playboy best friend, and a lot of just weird random stuff happens to these characters on the trip, some of it maybe with a tiny tinge of the surreal. So a lot of the fun is just in seeing what's going to happen to them next, how they're going to get out of this scrape or that one, especially since Alma spends a lot of the movie trying to get around this unfamiliar land on her own without even a change of clothes to her. And as Alma, Sarah Lunazorek is just so watchable that it's almost easy to forget to be impressed by her because it's such a kind of withdrawn, deadpan performance. But she's never boring, even when all she's doing is staring at something. And I just love Sendejarvic's eye for composition. In contrast to the shagginess of the character's journey, every frame that you see in this movie just feels so deliberate, not in a way that feels phony, but just in a way that looks very intentional. And then underneath that striking surface, there's a lot of stuff going on here. You've got Alma's journey of sexual awakening. You've got her entry into adulthood. You've got the pain of her disconnection from not just her long lost father, but her Bosnian heritage and the way that the scars of the Bosnian War are still impacting these young people a generation later. So it's a movie that you enjoy in the moment and then you think about later. It's really enjoyable. It's really stylish. It's really smart. And I think it's a really striking debut.
Take Me Somewhere Nice. The film is unrated. It's at Lemley's Virtual Cinema to see at home. And our final film, which we need to do rather quickly, is the romantic comedy Queen Bee, starring Ellen Burstyn, James Caan, and Anne Margaret. Michael Lembeck directing. Andy.
Ellen Burstyn plays a widow who is really not able to take care of herself anymore. She almost burns her house down. Her daughter insists on putting her in a retirement home, at least temporarily, where she tries not to socialize, but eventually gets involved with the people. She's confronted with what she refers to as the people here are like mean girls, except with Medic Alert medallion. And the lead mean girl is Jane Curtin, who is just plays this horribly rude person. The rest of the cast has got Anne Margaret, Loretta Devine, and Christopher Lloyd, and James Caan, which is a pretty good cast.
Yeah.
But this whole thing feels like a TV movie, quite frankly, with the kind of score that I despise that reeks of TV, of Hallmark. And I didn't think there was great chemistry between Burstyn and Caan, who are the big romantic interest here.
All right. Queen Bees is the film, directed by Michael Lembeck. Donald Martin and Harrison Powell wrote it. It's rated PG-13. It's in select Lemley theaters, available on demand as well.
Support comes from Ciclavia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclavia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclavia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.